Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your health and well-being and what's going on in our total environment with our food, water, air, earth, with our communities, with our families, with our society, with the earth. Every week on Connect the Dots, we talk to different thought leaders, experts, advocates, media personalities, and authors of books about all of the different facets of what's going on in our world that connects to our health. I'm a longstanding health journalist, and for many years I simply reported on all the good things that we could do or not do to impact our health until my eyes were opened to the greater world of the environment and social policy and all that goes on there that is impacting us all the time while we're making, you know, trying to make good decisions for our personal life. Because if we don't make better decisions for our collective life, all those wonderful efforts, you know, at scale won't be very helpful. So we cover that. This particular show I'm really excited about because we are right on the verge of we're in a sweep this entire season where we're going through the presidential primary race. I don't cover the Republican side of it very much. I kind of leave that to those folks there. And I'm really happy to be able to do a more specific political show as we're going to be doing today because the New York primary and the debate several days earlier is coming up in the week that this show will be running on the Progressive Radio Network. So I'm really delighted to bring in, as we've seen with the Bernie Sanders campaign, there's a kind of, different ways that people are defining themselves as liberal and as progressive in terms of, you know, who they are with or what they want from a political leader. And because on the show we talk a lot about what we need in terms of the environment, what we need in terms of social justice, what we need in terms of health. This is, you know, we in addition to talking to all of those initiatives that we regularly cover here on the show, I think it's really important and timely in this moment to talk about the political leaders who, can be attuned to what we want and need on the earth at this time. So we're going to be discussing the Democratic candidates and what they represent with Katie Halper. Katie, I'm happy to say, is a millennial, so we're going to have a cross-generational conversation today. She's a comic, writer, blogger, satirist, and filmmaker based in New York. And she's also a New York native raised on New York City's Upper West Side, as I am, too. I came from there. And she's a teacher, an educator, an instigator. You're a former teacher. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah. It stays with you, like alcoholism.
Well, you're an educator in the broadest possible sense.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and she's also performed. She's a spokesperson. Yeah, you chime in and tell us.
Oh, yeah, and my latest thing is my, well, a couple of projects, but since June, I've had a really fun radio show and podcast on WBAI. Mm-hmm. Called The Katie Halper Show, Wednesdays from 6 to 7. It's also on iTunes and SoundCloud. And we've done a lot of Bernie Sanders-focused shows.
That's fantastic. I mean, so in fact, listeners, you can listen to this show as you're doing today, and you can tune into Katie's show tonight, and you can but it's going to be airing.
Oh.
The show is airing on Wednesday. We're pre-recording it.
Oh,
it's airing on Wednesday.
Sorry.
So yeah.
Yeah, sorry about
so,
that.
Yeah. So, and you could do that regularly if you want to.
Yeah. Subscribe on iTunes.
Yeah, exactly. Or at any time of the week, it's like you can tune in. So I actually, Katie and I met at an event in New York. We have been Facebook friends for a while, but I began listening to her radio show and, loved it. Love her voice, her outlook, her perspective, her guests, her smarts. So that's why I thought, oh, what fun it would be to have you here and connect the dots. So welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Sure, happy to have you. So, let's put it this way, okay? If you could design a conversation between your millennial generation and my, the original feminist generation, let's say, or the boomer
right.
generation, what do you think are the awarenesses that the millennials would like my generation to know about, and what would be the most productive and helpful kind of conversation we could have, you know, between you and me and between our two generations to really help move forward with what we need to kind of rectify the situation in our society and to protect, the Earth as a habitat for mankind and other species, humankind
right.
and other species.
Right. So is this related to the election or another issue? I mean,
Because the primary is going on this week. The election is going to be going on it's going to be going on till June and then on from there.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the interesting things is that there is this perception that older feminists and older women are
mm-hmm.
all Hillary and younger women are all Bernie. And that's
mm-hmm.
somewhat of an oversimplification, right? But the numbers
mm-hmm.
do show that there is more in general support for Bernie among older voters and more
among
support
older?
For Bernie. More support for Hillary among older. Thanks
mm-hmm.
for catching that.
Mm-hmm.
And more support for Sanders among younger voters, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is that this is an anecdote, but I think it's kind of relevant. My mom, who's a feminist and a writer, Nora
mm-hmm.
Eisenberg, she told me that the other day she went out for dinner with two feminist writer friends and a
mm-hmm.
feminist retired judge friend.
Mm-hmm.
And each of them felt like they were like in the closet. They didn't want to out themselves as being Bernie, pro-Bernie, because each
mm-hmm.
of them were supporting Bernie, but each of them also assumed the other ones were supporting Hillary. So they
mm-hmm.
kind of had a coming out party, and they realized all of them were actually supporting Bernie Sanders, which is pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is a lot of importance and symbolic importance, I would say, around having the first female president.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes for some women and some feminists, we get distracted by that and don't focus enough on the issues and which issues, which president, which politician, which policies will actually improve the lives of as many women as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is the big question with Sanders and Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate if let's say they were identical in policy, all things being
mm-hmm.
equal, and we had the chance to elect a man or a woman, I would definitely
mm-hmm.
want the woman. But I think they're different
mm-hmm.
enough that it's worth supporting Sanders. Of course, I'll vote for anyone who's in the general election. But
mm-hmm.
I do think that Sanders is actually more of a feminist than Hillary Clinton.
Why do you say that?
Well, I think that a big part of my generation's feminism is the idea of intersectionality,
mm-hmm.
which is this idea that Kimberly Crenshaw developed. And it's the idea that you can't just look at gender in a vacuum. So when you're looking about that gender, talking about gender, you have to also look at issues of class, issues of race, right? For instance,
mm-hmm.
the average wages that a woman earns when we relate it to men is different if you're a white woman and different if you're a woman of color. So women
mm-hmm.
of color make even less, right, than white women. And I think that there's also kind of a questioning of the relationship between identity politics and policy politics. So an example I give, and I'm not comparing Hillary Clinton to Margaret Thatcher, but, you know, we would never – I assume most women who are supporting Hillary and identify as feminists would not have supported Margaret Thatcher. I assume that most women who identify as feminists would not have supported and did not support Sarah Palin, right, to use a more recent
mm-hmm.
example. So
mm-hmm.
it's clearly not enough to have the gender of a woman, right? That doesn't make you a feminist automatically. I think it's a lot more complicated because Hillary isn't totally anti-feminist and reactionary and right wing, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's a more challenging decision when we're looking at someone like Bernie Sanders and Hillary. I think that Sanders' policies are more feminist. He's more unapologetically pro-choice than Hillary is. He has a record of being unapologetically pro-choice. She has some caveats. His minimum wage issue is another example that affects women disproportionately because women are most affected by that, the minimum wage. He wants to raise it on a federal level to 15. Clinton was happy with a $12 an hour minimum wage. And on a state, basically on the state's, when it comes to states, they can go to 15, but that's a little weird because in theory, you know, progressives, Democrats, liberals were not really into leaving things to the states. States' rights have led to a lot of homophobic, racist, sexist, misogynist policy. And his foreign policy issues, his foreign policy stances to me are, this has been like, to me, the most ignored issue. And one of the places where they have the most significant difference. She's much more hawkish than Sanders is. There's really no question. Clinton's a little bit more hawkish than Obama was, too. And he, I think, has always been on the right side of foreign policy. There are instances where he voted for stuff like with Libya, but in terms of where they've differed, he's been on the right side. And, of course, war and peace and issues of, you know, the destabilization, the use of rape as a weapon of war, those issues, of course, affect women more than men, too. So those are issues that aren't on their face about gender. Abortion is, right? But the issues of the minimum wage and foreign policy, they're not on their face about gender, but they definitely are in real life about gender.
Let me ask you something, Katie. Do you think that the views that you're sharing are kind of novel insights that, you know, that you have, or would you say that, you know, this is kind of a shared perspective by, you know, other women in your generation? Is this something, you know, are other women aware of this? Are they, you know, thinking in these terms? Because in my generation, you know, I would say it would be kind of like, you know, women's peace activists and, you know, my own, you know, mentor, teacher, the writer Grace Paley was one, you know, a very early peace activist and organizer. You know, peace activists, women peace activists would very often be feminists, but that didn't mean that all feminists would be peace activists. In other words, would be anti-war. Whereas what about in your generation? Is it more common to see, you know, folks, well, I guess you're saying it through the phenomenon of intersectionality. So is it then more common for, you know, your generation to kind of see all these different issues connecting in a way that, you know, maybe we didn't?
I don't know if it's more, it's an interesting question. I don't know if there are more women who see the connections than before, but I think there's a language around it. There's definitely a language around it. A lot of that language is used in a way to criticize the feminists who don't make the intersectional connection. So, you know, kind of white, typically white feminists, middle class. There's a lot of resentment. And one of the reasons people don't like to identify as feminists, and one of the reasons I think it's so great that someone like bell hooks does, is because it has been such a white middle class movement for so long. And I think, of course, I can't tell women of color what to do. It's not my decision. But I think that what bell hooks does is she kind of takes ownership and of feminism. And instead of saying, oh, I'm not going to use the word because it's traditionally been associated with middle class white women, she's changing the way it's associated. She's changing the people it's associated with, right? So every woman of color, every working class woman who identifies as feminist is actually changing what it means to be a feminist and making it a more inclusive label.
And she, of course, was one of the first to stand apart and say, because of these, you know, because of these other things that Clinton is for, I can't, you know, based upon gender, support her, and I'll be supporting Sanders.
Right.
I mean, she issued that statement, you know, pretty early on and very impressively, very well done, and
right.
and created a real yeah. discussion around that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed in a lot of feminists who I think have a very jingoistic feminism, and I don't think they do usually. I think that I don't know what's happening with this election. I think that there's a lot of kind of, and I'll of course get in trouble for saying this because it's anti-feminist, but I do think there's some irrational, and look, I have to admit it, I feel the burn, and I feel like I'm a Bernie bro. I wrote this on Facebook the other day. I was like, 25% of the reason that I'm a Bernie bro, and I use that term, I'm reclaiming it because it's usually used as an insult, is mm-hmm. because I really love Bernie Sanders. But I would say 75% of the reason that I can't stop thinking about Bernie Sanders and I can't stop writing and tweeting and putting stuff on Facebook and on Instagram and mm-hmm. doing videos and talking about my radio show, 75% of that is in reaction to what I see as this totally absurd, unprincipled, intellectually dishonest, and dishonest in general, smears and attacks on Sanders and his supporters. Some of it from Hillary campaign and some of it from her supporters. I got on Twitter today, someone made, this is so ironic. I mean, you can't make this up. If I read this in a screenplay, I'd say it's too over the top. But someone on Twitter, I can't tell if they're a man or a woman because, of course, like most really spineless trolls online, they are anonymous. But someone said was complaining about Bernie bros and took some images of Bernie bros, alleged Bernie bros, saying bad things about Hillary. And mm-hmm. I wrote something like and the person tagged me. And so I responded like, oh, is this the part where I take screenshots of terrible things that Hillary supporters have done and said? And this mm-hmm. person, as if to prove my own point, starts tweeting photos of me with Lenin, with Karl Marx, with Sanders, as Karl Marx calls me a commie.
Wow.
The Ann Coulter of the left. I mean, like,
oh my
terrible,
goodness.
Terrible things. And it's just so ironic because I was literally saying, yeah, well, there are lots of terrible things that Hillary supporters do. And what does this person do? Does exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Jeez. That's
sometimes
really...
I think these people are Bernie plants. I'm not even kidding. I mean, I just don't understand how they think this is good PR for
Trump?
Hillary.
Trump plans?
No, Bernie. I mean, I'm being somewhat facetious, but it's like, it's such bad Hillary PR in the name, alleged name of Hillary. Like, you think you're helping uh-huh. Hillary Clinton by being a hateful troll defending her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you, like, she doesn't want people doing this. That's not a good look.
Right. Well, that's true, probably,
but I do
yeah.
feel like I wrote about this the other day. I wrote on Facebook. I described late onset hawkishness that I'm seeing among a lot of feminists. It's this all of a sudden feminists who used to be able to see, who consider themselves intersectional feminists and used to be able to see the connections between war and gender, right? Between mm-hmm. violence and imperialism and neocolonialism and neo-imperialism. I mean, there's some feminists out there who are totally mainstream politically or middle of the road and have always been kind of maybe like neoliberal, right? And I've never agreed with them on
yeah.
foreign policy. But they're Democrats, right? They're like pro-choice. They're better about taxes. They're, you know, they're liberal. Those ones are people I don't really connect with on a political level or intellectual or moral ethical level, but I understand them, and they're being consistent. They never really cared about, you know, they never had a problem with what, well, first of all, they probably had no idea about the coup in Honduras that mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton basically ignored. They probably didn't think that there's anything really wrong in what happened in Libya, et cetera. But the people who are driving me absolutely crazy, and I just cannot like contain myself, are the people who used to care about these issues and all of a sudden are saying, oh, well, you know, she's not that bad, actually. Or, yeah, you know what? Who am I to judge her on foreign policy? I've never been Secretary of State. Like, that's funny because you never stopped yourself from judging politicians before. I mean, it's a little absurd to not be able to judge people because you've never had their occupation, right?
That I find incomprehensible, actually. I mean, I think that
yeah.
sounds like an obfuscation, and they're giving a free pass on these issues because
exactly, which is
of something
in
else,
because it's infantilizing, right? That's the big irony.
Well, you know, I'm going to back up and ask you another question here, because I think it's relevant to where we are at this point of the conversation, which is how well-informed, you know, are women on a range of historical foreign policy, domestic policy, environmental, and other issues? In other words, if, you know, it's kind of like everyone who is female could be a feminist, but that doesn't mean that everyone who's female wants to major in women's studies programs. Just put it on an academic level. So my question is, and this goes back also, you're mentioning the situation with Honduras. You know, in I think more so in my generation, it's not that there aren't people who are incredibly well informed. Obviously, you know, as a journalist and everything, you know, or in circles where people are incredibly knowledgeable. Again, people do have more defined areas of interest. You know, they may not be across the board. I know that because I cover a fairly broad range as it is. I remember one time I was applying for the impact job, which is the, you know, job of getting people into action and supporting nonprofits and advocacy. I applied for that job, and I have a broad background covering food, health, the environment, science, policy, media. You know, that's basically my beat, right? And a new guy who kind of came in as the wunderkind at that point at Huffington, like a, you know, an executive editor, and he'd just come in the week before. I was sent to him. He looked at my resume, and he said, "What's your niche? You cover all of this," and he was like stumped, you know, by that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end. And, you know, and I thought that my relative breadth was something, you know, good, but there are areas where, I am less knowledgeable, probably, you know, in the foreign policy area. I would say that's not my particular forte. But I regularly encounter women of my generation who are much less well-informed and define a lot of matters of public policy as kind of being, don't go there, I can't participate there, and they're not knowledgeable.
Right.
And I bring this up also because, you know, I think we have to back up and explain what you were talking about in terms of Clinton's role in Honduras for my audience.
Right.
But also to say,
and
you know,
what happened in Honduras too.
Right, exactly. But also to say, how well informed would you say your generation, or, you know, even the Gen Xers, or, you know, women of that generation, are women informed and paying attention more so in the younger generations, or is it kind of spotty and, you know, too much, and they don't feel empowered to have a say in those areas, and they don't follow them, and they're opting out of it, like, you know? And then, therefore, they only can major in women's studies, let's say.
Well, I think,
I mean, to put it on an academic metaphor.
Sure, of course, I don't know I don't feel like I can comment on the difference, because I just don't know the data or, you know, the numbers in terms of older women and younger women. The thing that I was talking about more are the women who usually, whether or not they're informed, they felt comfortable condemning George Bush, let's say, for what he did in Iraq. There was no, they didn't stop themselves from doing that. They didn't say, you know, well, I've never been the president of the United States, so far be it from me to judge him. I never heard that. I heard some of that with, it's funny, you saw some of that with Obama because of race, right? Now, I'm not going to, what's interesting and needs to be said is that it's not a black and white, no pun intended, you know, it's not this black and white extreme where one side is saying there's no racism, there's no sexism, and Obama and Hillary are, you know, Obama played the race card and Hillary played the gender card. By the way, Bill Clinton did say Obama played the race card, that his campaign played the race card on him. Then was asked about why he said that and said, no, I didn't say that. So I find it utterly hilarious when the Clinton campaign tries to lecture people about tone. Unless they mean by tone, you should be race baiting and also fear mongering and refer to RFK's assassination, which is another thing. I don't know if you remember this. In 2008, Hillary Clinton was being asked basically why she wasn't dropping out of the election. She said, oh, well, you know, my husband didn't secure the nomination until June in California. And we all remember what happened, and it was June in California that Bobby Kennedy was killed. So, I mean, it was like the most, she had to apologize for that because it was such a heinous fear-mongering attempt basically she was saying, well, I'm not going to drop out because, God forbid, something, you know, this guy gets assassinated. And given that there was a higher Secret Service level for Obama than there has ever been, higher security detail, because he's black and because there were so many threats against him. I mean, that was a pretty horrible thing to say. But, I mean, unless you want to draw, if she wanted to make the point, there is a lot of racism in this country, and it is so unfortunate that this is the person who, you know, for that this person needs such a high level of security. But that clearly wasn't it. It was vote for me because this guy could get executed, assassinated. But I guess I'm talking more about the women who do, like the ones who do condemn people on foreign policy, and all of a sudden, and the ones who used to see the connection between war and women's issues, and all of a sudden, they're no longer qualified to talk about it. Actually, it would be really interesting to track some of the articles. But I read an article the other day by someone who's really taken up the Hillary mantle. Oh, what I wanted to say before I move on, is that there is racism. Obama dealt with racism, and there is sexism. Hillary does deal with sexism and double standards. There's no doubt in my mind. I think that we can both acknowledge that and say that she's not the candidate I want to support, right? Clarence Thomas is not a Supreme Court justice that I'm excited to defend or would ever defend. I'm sure he has faced and does face racism. It's a little different because Clarence Thomas is, I would say, is racist himself. And I don't think Hillary Clinton is sexist per se. I think some of her policies are, but that's a different story. But she certainly isn't as antithetical to feminism as Clarence Thomas is to anti-racism, right? In other words, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think those, the ones that I'm really annoyed with are the ones who are just being inconsistent and dishonest. Like, I think if you want to say that Hillary is a woman and you want to see that in your lifetime, I would disagree. I think it's a little bit problematic to use a cop-out word that means nothing, but it's a nice cover. I think it's a little problematic to do that, but at least there's all of a sudden you don't care about foreign policy that drives me crazy. And you basically don't care about policy. It's all about identity politics.
So that's what they're basically saying. And what would be the – why? I mean, you know, why do you think people are having that response? Is it just – you know, what is that about?
I mean, I do think that both sides have very annoying advocates on them, and they exacerbate – they're actually doing damage to their own side, right? So I think every time there are some Bernie bros out there, right? Some hostile, sexist people. But it's totally exaggerated, statistically speaking. I mean, for every Bernie bro, you have a Hillary shill, right? A Hillary bot who's just as terrible, basically, as a Bernie bro. As we saw with the very meta attack on me from this person who was allegedly concerned by the attacks that the Bernie bros were launching. You know, and then she red baited me, and I have to thank him or her for putting in so much time, because, you know, he or she did a lot of photoshopping to make his point of me. And so I want to, you know, maybe if this person just wants to ask me out on a date, you could just do that over Twitter. You don't have to try to get my attention by putting me in photos of Lenin. I think that is true, that like both sides have had people on them who make the other side that much more committed to the candidate, right? So you have Bernie people who are just basically rallying the pro-Clinton troops, and then you have Clinton people who are rallying the pro-Bernie troops. I mean, and as I said earlier with my comment about the how 25% of my interest in or support of Bernie Sanders, I mean, I would support him anyway, but my the intensity with which I feel it and do it is, I would say, 25% because of Bernie and 75% because of the Hillary bots. But I do think there's a lot of people getting some people have also put their professional, or like, I think there's also some people who their kind of their name is at stake. Like whether they're, you know, some writers or journalists, I think they put so much defense, so much time and effort defending one or the other, although I really do see this more on the side of Hillary, I have to say, that now they kind of can't stop. And mm-hmm. now it's going to be bad for them if she doesn't win. So there's some self-interest there, too.
It's going to be bad for them. How so?
Well, they're big Clinton people, and they're really trying to help her win the election. And if she doesn't get it, then all their predictions about why she was the better candidate, right? More uh-huh. electable candidate. Right. Some of them, I guess, could say, you see, I was right about the sexism, and that's why she lost. And if she loses, it's not going to be about the sexism. But, my God, people are, like, so condescending and infantilizing towards her, which, newsflash, is not a feminist thing to do, right? You don't like, pity a woman because she's a woman. Unless, I guess, what is it? Don't Orthodox Jews do that? Isn't there some prayer where they're like, thank God I wasn't born a woman?
Well,
anyway.
The men, thank God they weren't born a woman. But I think you've hit on a point that I've noticed, too, that's really interesting, which is there's this sense of almost, I'm disloyal as a woman. If I don't support a woman, it's like a guilt trip. And I owe it to her because she has suffered, like I have suffered, like other people have suffered.
Right. Thank God for small favors. There's also anti-Semitism that, not so much anymore, but we can feel better that Bernie Sanders has faced anti-Semitism. Just side note. So we can feel less
guilty. But I mean, the point is, it's not like whether, you know, it's
of
not
course,
like
right.
we, it's not like she's her, our, you know, that we have to, that we're accountable to her. See, to me, that's a whole flip. It's like the thing that Sanders does is he's accountable to us. He is, you know, the whole Twitter meme has been bothering me. The Twitter meme, you know, is this particular hashtag, I'm with her, which is circulating on Twitter. I'm saying that for anyone who's not on Twitter so they know what we're talking about here.
Right.
So that's the Hillary hashtag I'm with her.
Is the pound sign before a word. Okay,
and so that's like, you know, people tag any kind of thing they write in order you know, for people to pick up on who are interested in that to pick up on it. So the whole idea
of feeling the burn.
But, you know, the whole thing of I'm with her is almost like I have to take care of her. It's not like she's taking care of us.
Right.
And I mean, the hope is that maybe she would help women break through a glass ceiling and have, you know, better earnings and stuff like that. How that's going to happen in the economy of the
1%?
Where,
I mean,
you know, without
really
taxing the wealthy,
the 1%. That's what it is, right?
I think that's what she represents. Go ahead.
Is a more diverse 1% as opposed to getting rid of a 1%. Maybe that's not
right.
Maybe it's a more diverse 10%, let's say, because the Republicans
I think it's the 10%, exactly.
Yeah.
In other words, so it's still this aspirational thing. By identifying with wealthy people and striving in that direction, a percentage of us, and you or I may be close, let's hope so, can attain that exalted realm of the 10%, and she'll help us do it. Even if we're women, and, you know, that's kind of the unspoken aspirational dream. I, too, can finally partake of the American success story, et cetera. And, you know, and then you're not looking over your shoulder to look at the 90% where, you know, and so it's like I'm with her in that I want to be in that club or I want to take care of her because she represents that success to me. Whereas Bernie is facing
because she,
really
you know, funny. She cited Kissinger as a work reference, basically. You know, during a debate, she actually said out loud, Henry Kissinger said I was one of the best secretaries of state he'd ever seen. I couldn't believe it. And that actually speaks to, you know, one thing that I will admit that Hillary, I think, was one of the few times she's been genuine, is when she said during a debate that she's not a natural politician the way her husband or Obama are. And I think that's true. I think she, and this is, to me, it's almost the most endearing thing about her, is that she does lack this schmoozy thing. She lacks this kind of, I don't want to say lack charm, because I don't find her uncharming, but I think she lacks a kind of networky, like a, what's it called, glad arming, glad hand, what's it called?
I think she lacks a kind of the certain kind of what I call mommy loved me charisma that her husband and President Obama have oodles and oodles of. And when someone has that kind of confidence because mommy loved me, they kind of exude it, and everyone finds them lovable, even if they, you know, do horrible things, even if they disadvantage the whole black community. We are so charmed by them. We're beloved. They, we like them. And so I think it's actually a tremendous advantage that we can seal the – I mean, I can see the wheels turning in any Obama speech. It didn't – you know, I wasn't – after a time, I'm like, yeah, he's charming. He's done some good. It's great to have the first black president, but I can hear him talking about out of both sides of his mouth simultaneously, whatever speech he's giving. And if I'm listening to a State of the Union address, I feel like I'm, you know, having a cognitively dissonant experience despite the charm. In the case of Clinton, because of the charm, or the I think she's perfectly pleasant, but the the slightly reduced charisma there, it's even more evident, and I think it's both in a sense people hold that against her, and then other women, we as women look at it and we kind of go, oh, gee, she's saying doing the same thing they are, but as a woman, she can't get away with it. Like, I'm angry about that, rather than going,
I mean,
gee, isn't this great? We get to wake up to what's going on here, you know?
Right. I mean, and again, I do think you can acknowledge that someone faces sexism, and you can, and I think that Hillary is seen as, the thing is, the Clintons are pretty, they don't have a real, they're not very scrupulous, right? But I do think that probably Hillary is seen as slightly more – I think she is calculating. I think all politicians are. I think she's at the more calculating end of the spectrum and the more willing to do anything to win end of the spectrum. I think her husband is too. I think that she gets seen a little bit worse because she's a woman, and that's seen as anti-natural for women. So, again, I acknowledge that. But it's not like she's the same level of Bernie. I mean, Bernie is more honest than the Clintons. He just is.
Yes, well, that's part of the whole appeal there.
Right, but
he's got a record. You can look at it.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So what's funny though is that this I thought was a telling moment. So when Hillary was debating and mentioned Henry Kissinger, I mean, I remember my jaw. I know that no one else, not that many people my age know who he is or know what the terrible things he did, but I remember being shocked. And what's interesting is that Bill Clinton, this really proves the adeptness of his political charisma and calculation, was that what he said was that he said the same thing, basically. He said she's so good at her job that Henry Kissinger, of all people, said she was a great Secretary of State. And that is a huge difference. Like, that is not – what Hillary did was totally tone deaf. All Bill Clinton did was add this little turn of phrase, of all people, and it totally transformed what he was saying, because it becomes – it transforms from a thing that's basically – pointing to Kissinger as a reference or as a reliable character witness or policy witness. And instead of doing that, Bill Clinton's basically saying she's so good that even Henry Kissinger, with whom we disagree in theory, praised her. Hillary didn't say anything like that. And that's what was so weird, is how tone deaf it was and out of touch. So, and that's, I mean, in some ways I appreciate that about Hillary. Like, I think she just isn't as successful at peddling BS as her husband is. And I joke that the real harm that he did, not just being kind of volatile and loose cannon on the campaign trail, but one of the hardest things he did is that he really raised the bar on lying. You know, he's so good at it. And look, I don't care what he did in the Oval Office. I really don't. I thought it was a little stupid. He did, as Attorney General, allow for the – the legalization of sodomy. So that's hypocritical. but I don't, yeah, I don't, for, in general, my rule is, like, I don't care what socially liberal politicians do in their private lives, as long as it's consensual. And I do care about what socially conservative politicians do in their private lives, regardless of, I mean, even if it is consensual, I still think it's fair game because it's
because
hypocrisy.
Of the hypocrisy. I think that's a good guideline.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the, I think that's really, I mean, here's another question since we're on to Bill Clinton just at the moment. Do you feel, I mean, recently for listeners who aren't familiar with this, some Black Lives Matter protesters happened in on Clinton making a speech in Philadelphia, and he responded in a very attacking kind of way that harkened back to the accusations that his administration, well, it's actually not an accusation, it's a truth that his administration is detailed in a new book called The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander, I don't know how to say it. He kind of wiped out the educational, the safety net that helped keep lower income communities, people in communities of color in the social framework, and replaced that with a huge private prison system where,
state,
an undue number.
Refer to it.
Exactly. It's terrible. So, here Hillary Clinton has been trying to dissociate herself from that record and say, you know, we the Clintons are, you know, the champions of people of color that
and
was born out.
She, of course, made that statement when she was stumping for her husband for his crime bill. She said she referred to super predators who had to be brought to heel, which
she was referring to black children.
Yeah, I mean, everyone at the time knew that that's basically what it meant. I mean, and she was saying she was talking about gang members, but of course, you know, I don't know the numbers, but they're less percentage-wise, there are fewer white people in gangs. I mean, there are so many types of white criminals and killers. I'm not to give us credit for that. But yeah, the racial connotations were pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. So she's been dissociating and apologizing literally for making the super predator statement. And then, you know, and yet her husband then goes out and repeats, very similar kinds of remarks.
Right.
And this is just in the last week that he has done this. So my question, so that's the kind of the backup of what's been happening. But my question to you is, because some people, like I've, chatted with people who hadn't noticed this report of his behavior, and one friend said, she'll kill him. She will be so pissed at him for his misstep.
Right.
And, other people have said, well, he is a volatile temperament, and, this is what he really thinks, and he's just coming out with it when puts comes to shove.
I think something happened to him. He used to be a way better kind of ambassador, and I think he's become somewhat unhinged.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it was deliberate to appeal to, to sort of dog whistle to more right-wing base?
Maybe, because they did do that. They did. I mean, recently he said he referred to the awful legacy of the past 8 years. And I just thought that was a really clumsy wording. I wasn't even being that cynical about it, but I thought I was like, some people saw it as a dig at Obama and as an attempt to play – as a dog whistle thing to get white racist voters, basically. But what's so fascinating is that at the very least, let's give him the biggest benefit of the doubt. At the very least, it was clumsy wording. And some Hillary defenders wouldn't even admit that. And it's such a double standard, because if Sanders had said anything like that, they would have called him a racist. Same thing with this CP time. Someone made a CP time joke, Bill de Blasio. With Hillary, and then it's like campaign people time. If Bernie did that, oh my God, the tone stuff, they would just read him the Riot Act. Yeah, I do think that.
Yeah, that was a very strange thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very odd thing. Yep. That
and
was pretty
then,
strange.
I mean, this is really weird. On Twitter, they actually tried to make Jane Sanders a racist for meeting with Joe Arpaio. She didn't meet with him. He ambushed a tour that she was being given. In fact, on my show, I interview Eric Andiola, who's Bernie's National Latina Press Secretary, and she was there.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in Arizona. Her mom was almost deported, and she was there and brought Jane Sanders to see Tent City, the inhumane jail.
Mm-hmm.
You should have seen people try to use the photos of Jane Sanders and Joe Arpaio as evidence that she's a racist. Because clearly they're trying to get the Joe Arpaio's endorsement, right? Like he's already endorsed Trump, but who knows? He could go for this socialist Jew from Brooklyn, right? I mean, it's just so stupid. It doesn't even make sense. It's ridiculous. So whenever Jane Sanders trends, it's because of some ridiculous attack that And you can always tell on Twitter when some when an attack has nothing to it, when people don't link to what actually happened. So another time that they said she was racist, it was something she said that literally was like, well, we're in 20, that was 2012, now we're in 2016. Literally, it was just about an Obama coalition or something. And she was a racist. And what was fascinating is that no one linked to the actual interview in which she was allegedly being racist. Because if they had, they'd have to show evidence that, you know, they would have been admitting or showing the how empty their claim was, how baseless the claim was.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed with all of this, too, is it has driven me more to Twitter, you know, than I've been on Twitter before. I've always been on Facebook, and I read a whole bunch of sites and kind of regularly check in with a whole range of things. What apart from Twitter, what sites are your go-tos or go-tos of, you know, people in your generation who, you know, where do you go to get informed? I mean, obviously you don't link to anything on Twitter, but what are some of your, you know, favorite
Democracy Now.
Sites?
Democracy Now. Think Progress I like a lot, although they're a little bit too pro-Clinton in some ways. But they're good on a lot of other issues. Fusion, some of Fusion I like, some of it I don't, but there's some stuff I do like. Let's see, what else? I mean, there are certain journalists whose work I like. Michelle Alexander, of course, who wrote The New Jim Crow. I thought Ta-Nehisi Coates was, you know, I think that he said some stuff about Bernie Sanders that was much more, I mean, he wound up saying he's going to vote for Bernie Sanders, which is fascinating. He was critical of Bernie's position on reparations, which was a, I would say, pragmatic one, unfortunately, which is that there's no way to pass. So he wasn't going to, you know, he wasn't going to advocate for them. Of course, Hillary said the same thing, but in a much less direct way. And we actually had Nando Villa, the Fusion correspondent, who asked Bernie about reparations. He came on our show. And he's you know, pretty pro-Bernie, too, even though that headline was kind of used against Bernie. But that's another example of the media. I mean, it's one thing for Ta-Nehisi Coates to say, I expect more from a radical. And it's another thing for Chuck Todd to go after Bernie Sanders and not Hillary Clinton on reparations. Like, do they – I don't think Chuck Todd ever talked about the carceral state, you know, like Ta-Nehisi Coates does. It's a little bit different. So that was really disappointing, the way the mainstream media was peddling. I mean, because built into Ta-Nehisi Coates' critique was the acknowledgement that, yes, the Clintons have had terrible policies for black people.
What do you think in terms of what you're seeing on the ground? Because we're kind of coming down to, you know, the last four some minutes of our show. What do you think from what you're seeing on the ground? Do you think Bernie is got a chance to win in New York?
I mean, I do.
What are you seeing?
I think he does have a chance. I mean, it's like the fact that it's even a question is just amazing. I mean, obviously I want him to win, but the fact that we're even debating this, like, we never would have thought that it would even be a possibility, right, for him to win. Like, any of these things, you know, and he's won the last, how many, 8 out of 9 primaries? And it's just amazing. I mean, there's some funny, very funny memes going around that's like all the excuses for why he won. We had actually someone on my show. We had the guy who started the Bernie Made Me White hashtag, which was a joke about how he actually predicted jokingly that, you know, if Bernie won Alaska and Hawaii, they were going to call those states white, which they did, even though they're some of the least white states in the country. But yeah, I mean, I started a website, comediansforbernie.com, and we're going to put up a statement. And some people have already signed on: James Adomian, Ted Alexandro, John Fugelsang, Carolyn Castillo. And I do think that there's like, and it's not because he's a joke or a clown. It's actually the opposite. He's the only politician who isn't a joke. But I think that there's, yeah, people really are connecting with him on a level that they haven't before. And I also think there's a major electability part to it, which is that there are people who could be brought over from Trump to support Bernie, And I don't think there are any people who could be brought over from Trump to support Hillary. Because I think that they will appreciate Sanders' anti-establishment irreverence. You know, as I interviewed Bob Scheer, and he said, you know, people are pissed off. The difference is that Bernie Sanders is tapping into people's resentment in a progressive way. Donald Trump is doing it in a neo-fascist way.
Yeah, I think that pretty much. So, you know, and I think that, you know, coming down to the end of our show here, I think that's also a kind of sign for people, you know, who are either, you know, confined to a few issues or in the, you know, neoliberal camp, which is, you know, the jig is up. And so which way is going to be actually better, you know, if it goes down? So instead of going the choices between Clinton and Trump, and if we don't vote Trump, you know, Clinton, we're going to get Trump. I would say that people may not show up for Clinton.
Right, no, I know.
And
that's
her solutions, you know, are problematic.
Right.
And so, you know, actually, if this is a moment where people are fed up and Trump is an indicator of that rather than just, you know, purely the boogeyman, I think, you know, you have to pay attention rather than saying we're going to limp along in the same way and hope we can kind of pull it off, you know.
And people are just not being very smart about it. I mean, Bernie Sanders, from all polls, would beat Cruz and Trump by a bigger margin than Hillary.
Well, I want to thank you for being with me
today.
Connect the Dots, Katie Halper. And everyone can go to katiehalper.com to find out
Twitter,
more about what –
And my Twitter handle is KT, so letter K, letter T, helps, H-A-L-P-S. Katie Helps.
Yeah, that's great. And also tune into how do people tune into your radio show?
Yeah, on WBAI. So you can listen on WBAI.org. Listen. And it's 6 p.m. on Wednesdays. Sometimes it's after the news. So it's sometimes it's 6:05, 6:10, 6 to 6. So it's 6-ish to 7. You can also find it on SoundCloud and on iTunes and katiehelpershow.com. And, yeah, sign up on iTunes, on SoundCloud. But you can listen to it live on 99.5 FM. That's WBI, 99.5 FM. And online at WBI.org. You can listen to it as it plays, or you can listen to it archived.
Fantastic. It's really been fun having this conversation.
Lots
of fun. Really love it. And, you know, so if you're in New York, everyone, get out to vote. Listen to the primary if you're undecided. Listen to Katie's show if you're undecided.
Come to my
live
show that I do. And I'm doing something on the 19th at the Brooklyn Commons. We're having kind of a Battle of New York headquarters. We're going to be covering the primary.
You're kidding.
April 19th. No. April 19th at the Brooklyn Commons at 388 Atlantic Avenue. It'll probably be live streamed too. But
so are you going to live stream the results, or you're pushing out
our commentary? Yeah.
So is that
we'll
a place where people could come to sort of participate and see who's winning and sort of party?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you can come also if people who like to tweet or are journalists. There's tons of outlets and tables that you can sit at also, and so you can cover it. So again, and Wi-Fi. So again, it's 388 Atlantic Avenue. I also do a show there the first Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. We're going to say 7:30 because if I say 8, people get there at 8:30. At 7:30, yeah.
Well, thank you again, Katie. It's been great having you on
the show.
You. So much fun. And let's feel the burn. Go Bernie.
Bernie.
And thank
burn,
go
baby,
Bernie.
Burn.
Burn, baby, burn. And thank you, listeners, for being with us.
A new podcast. All right.
Okay, I think we're going to kind of have to go out here because we have to, you know, kind of close on time
Bernie
here. But
to me. Sorry, talk Bernie.
All right. Talk Bernie to me? Great name.
Yeah.
That's really funny. All right. So thank you, listeners, for being with us this week on Connect the Dots, and come back next week for our next show. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Vote this coming week. Make sure you vote. Be well.
And there was this. Yeah.